Lynn Thompson here of Living on Purpose in the home of Jacques Fresco and Roxanne Meadows in Venus, Florida. And we've just found our way out here from Sarasota today on April 13th, 2008. Hi, Jacques. It's so nice to meet you.
How are you?
I'm great.
Nice meeting you.
Yeah. So I became aware of you through Dr. Tomorrow from Vancouver, and you were just saying that the last time you saw him was about 8 years ago?
8 years ago,
yeah.
Yes.
How did you first meet him?
Well, I think I met him at a futures meeting, and I heard some recordings, and I was very interested, and I invited him out. He came out, and he walked around. He appeared to be interested in what we were doing.
I'm sure he was.
I really don't know very much more about him, except that he points out new electronic devices and what they can do. He tries to make people aware of what's coming.
Your website, which is thevenusproject.com. Yes. So, Roxanne Meadows, how did you and Jacques Fresco first meet over 30 years ago?
I was on a cruise ship doing portraits, bad portraits, for a living, traveling around, seeing many beautiful places, and somebody approached me and talked to me about Jacques' ideas, talked to me about a lot of his inventions, and he had tape recordings of lectures that Jacques did. Jacques used to lecture, this is when he was in Miami, he used to lecture at universities around the world in Miami and at his home 3 days a week. I went and listened to the tapes in this person's room on the cruise ship, and they were more interesting than anything that I'd ever heard. It made more sense to me than anything I'd ever heard. So I got off the cruise ship and went to his lectures and started taking his drafting lessons, and I really learned how to draw. I went through 4 years of art school and didn't know what a vanishing point was. And Jacques taught me the laws behind art. He has an extremely interesting way of teaching art, and it can be taught to anyone. So I went through his courses, and I learned how to draw on his design, so it was very interesting. And then he taught me how to do model making, and I started reading his book, going to his lectures, and working with him. And we were together for about 33 years now.
Wow, that's amazing. So you knew him when he was, 59 then?
About 60, I think we met, yeah.
Yeah, 59. About 60.
Yes.
Do you mind me asking how old you are?
59.
You are 59 now?
I am 59.
And you met when he was 59?
Right.
I love that.
59.
Oh, wow.
Now he's 92.
Yeah.
Huh. But luckily for me, he's still going very strong.
Wow, what an amazing partnership. Very impressive.
In the past, Jacques used to design hundreds of ideas and patents and inventions, but he found that they would use his planes to go faster and cheaper and quicker to bomb and destructive reasons. And he designed hip prosthesis and a lot of medical devices, but only the wealthy could use them. And he would help kids and people who were drug addicts and alcoholics, but he found that for every one he saved, the system produced 500 more. So he really began to think about how to redesign the system, which is for the benefit of all people and the environment. What this system is really the intelligent management of Earth's resources for everyone's advantage and for the environment.
Not for a few minority
right.
who want to take
right.
advantage of the whole thing.
There'd yeah. be no subservience, nobody taking advantage of anybody else, because you have access to everything and anything.
So how many people have come here to visit the project, the Venus Project?
We have people coming from all over the world all the time. Every week,
wow.
during the weekdays, to visit with us and learn more about the Venus Project in this direction.
Has anyone gone further with it, taken it back into their communities to try to use the model?
Well, there's a lot of people that go back and try and spread these ideas in this direction and try and get Jacques to speak at different conferences and try and do things like you're doing, put them on the air and put them on TV. And he is well known all over the world and is written up all over, but recently his designs are not implemented yet. But it's really the film that we think is the most important, because it's the ideas and the direction for a sustainable and sane future that we feel is more important to get out there. And the film would introduce these people to this direction and the ideas in an entertaining way. And then hopefully we'll get a group of people who may want to do something and build the first city.
Mm-hmm. That would be amazing. I mean, well, you've started the first small project community here
right.
anyway. I mean, it's remarkable.
More of a research center.
Yeah.
It's really old, pristine Florida. It's a well-kept secret in the middle of the state. Most people go to the coast, but it's quite beautiful. We'll go this way. And we dug all the waterways, and then the alligators came, and the otters, and we have deer and fox, and there's even bears, a bear pack in the area of Venus.
Wow.
I've only seen one bear in 30 years, so it's quite exciting.
Well, I saw my first alligator yesterday in Mayaca Park.
Here. They don't bother you. Don't go down and dangle your feet off the edge of the water, though. We found a beautiful place in southern Ecuador, in Loja, in Vilcabamba, in the mountains in the Andes. And we both really loved it as we were visiting a friend there that bought a lot of land. And we were buying some from him. Jacques may have an opportunity to do a museum of the future there.
Now, Future by Design, I see on this building.
Yes, that's the name of our nonprofit organization.
Okay.
But we're better known as the Venus Project. But this is the building that we named here where Jacques films his models.
This is 22 acres.
Well, we arranged it so you can't see another building when you're in any other building. There's woods and streams and ponds encircling each building. And so it's like you're isolated in each building. This is what we wanted to do to show the outskirts of the city that Jacques designed, what it would look like in a much smaller scale. You can see that the bridge sticks over cantilever over the water. You don't see any structures underneath, but there are structures. There are several beams that go across the road, and they're embedded in 3-foot by 3-foot concrete, so you can hold up a herd of elephants on this bridge. Everything that Jacques builds is overbuilt, very strong. Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about it. And the bridge that we're standing on, too, is concrete and steel. Yep. There's usually water under there, but Florida has had a drought for a couple of years. And then we have pathways through the woods and around the lakes. We ride bikes and walk. I think that's a pretty view.
What is the goal of the film that you're putting together? What is your vision for the possibilities with this?
We hope we can get the film out before things get worse in the society and maybe a lot more people lose their homes and lose their jobs and start to lose confidence in their government. But it will actually take something like that, I think, before people look for something else, look for other alternatives. But there really aren't any alternatives out there other than trying to fix things within this monetary system, which causes the problems in the first place. So we're hoping we can get this film out, which will really show how we get from here to there and what the possibilities of a positive future could be like. And then maybe at that time people will get together and say, let's try this, because all other social systems have failed, and this one too we feel is on its way out.
The guest house. I love the guest house.
Even our pump houses here.
Yes.
Concrete and steel, and they are not going anywhere in a hurricane. So that just houses the well.
This may be the only 22 acres that stays in place for a hurricane. Everybody will want to live here then.
Well, people have said that this is the hurricane shelter of Venus. Kiddingly, but it really is.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't really have any other hurricane shelter.
This is just so beautiful here. We got to have a pic of the guest house.
But we don't want to disturb the photographer.
Do you show that on your internet?
Yeah, if we link in some of these audios with the visuals, yeah, that'll be good.
Oh, my!
I love this.
Here we have working tables all over. Yeah, that's all we ever do. Our guests work. We work.
And comes in low all around. It'll take 5 minutes.
Lynn Thompson with Living on Purpose on the epic tour with Jacques Fresco here, and Roxanne Meadows, who's been a wonderful hostess in Venus, Florida. We're all fascinated with your vision, and one of my questions is, do you call this a utopian vision?
No, not at all. Just a transition toward the future. Building a safer world, free of war, poverty, hunger, and most of the things that plague humans today. We can overcome that. Not in hope and dreams, but with technology and applied science, we can build a world far different than the world we live in today, where war would be unthinkable, or another person wanting to hurt another person would be unacceptable. Kids would be brought up, here's how it's done, if you want to know that. We have a group of kids, and they're building things, little animated things. And older kids of different nationalities come over them and give them tips on how to improve it. black kids, Orientals. So every kid becomes extensional to one another. Every person that I meet has extended my life, opens up areas. So you're pleased to meet everybody. But in the past, the distant past, when one nation went to another, they didn't go there to help that country. They went there to exploit it. Cheap labor, take their oil, their land, their minerals, whatever they can take. So nations become very suspicious of one another. They don't trust each other because of the past. Thousands of years they've been doing that. But in our world, when we understand by sharing technology with the world, everybody working together to make the world a better place, we would benefit millions of people fast. For example, they say, you know, what would you do about handicapped people? We'll work on every device, the growing of organs if we can, no more digging up nickels and dimes for heart disease or cystic fibrosis, going around with a little box, right? What do you need in your lab? One electron microscope or two? We have the resources. We'll make it available. This stupidity of digging up nickels and dimes or food care packages for Africa does not solve problems. Makes you feel good. You walk down the street with a protest sign, you feel good. That's what the trouble with the liberal is. The liberal thinks man is being exploited. Industry should pay help higher wages. This is what unions believe. If they got that, we would lose our competitive edge in national trade. You understand that? The country would collapse. If labor unions win out, I'm not against labor. Don't misunderstand me. They want a piece of the pie, that's all. But if you have labor unions, if they succeed, we couldn't compete with Japan or China. We would die. So even if you succeed in electing, I don't want to name anybody, a very liberal human being, a decent person, and he upgrades the scale of everything, taxation for the rich would be higher. Competitive edge would be lost. So the system would collapse sooner. If a guy like Ralph Nader were elected to political office, I believe he's a real honest guy. And if he were elected, he'd probably be shot by the established order, or he would make things so great for the poor that we would lose our competitive edge. He would have health care for the old and disabled, you know. He couldn't enact that legislation. There's not enough money you can collect for that. But not knowing those things, Ralph Nader thinks technology is something else, and decent guy in government is something else. It's not. It's about overcoming scarcity. When you eliminate scarcity, if you ever attain that, there's no more people hitting you on the head, taking your watch, if they can have it. It's cheaper to give a person a watch than let these kids run wild. It's cheaper to make things available to people. In other words, as technology improves, I'm sure you've seen motion pictures of new production methods moving in real fast. Chemicals, all kinds of objects are treated by machine fast. And so that tells you that a guy on a production line, he can't move things that fast. They say to me, they always ask me this, can a machine be better than the designer? I know a little guy that designed a machine to pick up a freight train and empty it. He can't do that. The guys that design production methods today in machines, automation, machines work so fast, no human can do that. So the idea, will a machine surpass the performance of the designer? It'll always surpass the performance. Remember when women used to scrub clothing down by the river? The washing machine, she just turns it on. But that's crude method even today. But the future has so much new stuff to offer, like high-definition TV, and people are satisfied because they are not told what comes after that. Mm-hmm. They're not told we'll be able to culture livers and kidneys and hearts, so we don't need to plead for people for a heart transplant or sell their organs. This would be considered socially offensive. It'd be socially offensive for us to have machines watching over people. We consider that unacceptable. Machines do not monitor people. They only monitor resources. Do you understand that? Make things available to people. Monitoring people would serve no useful function.
How do we make the leap from where things are now with increasing monitoring and such an emphasis on war? How can we make the leap from where we are now?
First, I'm sorry to say this, it takes an economic collapse first. No one's about to give up what they have. Because I remember the last depression, people came into the Berliner Joyce Aircraft Factory, government people, said, "We're taking over your plan." And Henry Berliner said, "You know, why?" He said, "You haven't paid taxes on your machines in 3 years." He said, "I've had orders for airplanes. There's a depression on. Take the goddamn factory." So a factory that you own that isn't producing anything, you're not going to defend it. You don't care anymore. So as the system collapses, let's say they have container ships that take off one container at a time. You design a ship that takes the whole container section off, floats it off. You can't sell the old ship. No one wants it. Do you understand? So factories that have been surpassed by China and India, which is going to happen. In other words, if a man doesn't put his factory up in China, if he just ships stuff up and ships it back to his factory, he's going to put his factory up over there. The engineer's going to do that. And then India's going to come up with engineers. India's training lots of engineers that are very sharp and very interested. And so India will then come up with new ideas. And if America doesn't move, if America tries to cling to what was best 40 years ago, we will become a have-been nation. Because Americans get happy, they feel good, they build an automobile plant. Now they'd like to amortize the cost they put in to get it back. In the meantime, China might ask, maybe you don't need the stamp-out fenders. Maybe you can generate a whole automobile by moving molecules. That's nanotechnology. When nanotechnology comes in, we won't worry about shortages. We'll be able to make a ham sandwich without the ham, without killing animals. We'll be able to make protein tissue. We'll be able to make kidneys. We'll be able to make steel, or iron, or titanium by arranging atoms into whatever molecular structure we want. That promise is about, according to nanotechnologists, not me, about 15 years off. Let's say it's 25 years off. We'll be able to make things too easy to set a price tag on them. It's too much bother, all the paperwork. If you still don't understand me, if it rained gold for 2 days, people would bring it all in the house, fill every drawer with the gold, the attic. But if it kept raining gold for a year, they'd sweep it out, take their rings off, and throw it away. Do you understand that? Things have no value except in terms of their scarcity. Inventions come about, first of all, through need. You have to have a need for something. For example, there's an island off Ireland where women wear a harness like a cow, and they carry two buckets down from the hilltop to fill it with water to cook with. Then they go up the hill with it, and then they have to skin animals and melt down the fat for the lamps. So in the movie, we have a guy walking over and says, "Someday, young lady, you'll turn a little gas and the water will flow right out where you live, hot and cold. And someday, you'll press a button and lights will go on. And you'll turn it down, make it brighter or weaker." And she says, "What will women do?" You understand what I mean? If you're brought up in that culture, that would seem that your life's work, you know. And I want to show people, what will women do? What will people do with all this technology? They think work is normal. Work is offensive. It's the worst thing you can do to people, is put them in a monotonous job. Even psychologists tell me they hear the same old crap. It's very boring, the problems people have. So they will be schooled in the future to understand people. And so you don't talk at them, you talk to them. You know, and most people don't. They use you as an outlet, you know, blah, 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 you know, but they don't even remember what they said the next day. So we want to change all that, but it's going to take films, and the film will cause the sophisticated people to catch on right away. We don't need to convince everybody on Earth. We just have to convince less than 7,000 people to operate everything on Earth. You don't need millions of people agreeing with you. The few people that do these things will help direct society. You know, when I say direct society, I mean not to their own values, but to what is necessary to live in peace.
What are we going to do about religion, though?
Oh, we support all religions, so they don't have to go out and dig up nickels and dimes anymore. But on Sunday, you have all comparative religion, what different people believe all over the world. Then you have agnostics, what they believe, what atheists believe, what scientists believe, and you turn it on or off. But every point of view is on the air, okay? And we feel we're going to make soap operas, just like you got today, that look like soap operas. But in the soap opera, the little girl says, "Daddy, I'm going to university to become a cultural anthropologist." He says, "What's that?" And it shows what they do. And it shows what science is. Science is not just another thing. I'm a banker, this guy's a scientist, this man is a lawyer. All those professions that serve nothing, like investment banking, bankers, advertising, be phased out, because they do nothing. They add nothing to society.
So what will people do with their time?
Your television set shows what is needed, what professions are needed. Bridging the difference in German, in the South, we need you to go there. And a guy has to talk in a Southern accent. He goes in the South. We make different films for Atlanta, Georgia, different films for Tennessee, the backwoods. You know what I mean? You can't make a film and put it out there. But the film I want to make is general, to tour the world, to get enough people together to form a foundation. Then I tell them, you have to form organizations and you have to bring in criticism, find out what people find distasteful. And if they don't know enough about it, we'll have another film called Lifestyles of the Future, the professions of the future, you know. Like there's a camera that follows people in the movies through it. You don't have to stand there and take the picture. All the lighting moves to the optimal lighting for that position. It's all computerized. And so you just tell them what kind of film you want or what kind of house you want. And if you tell me that you're a sociologist, I will get you a library on the history of sociology, films on that subject, and what's new and how it relates to other fields. So we want your home to be very well equipped, like the internet. See? So you can get anything you want. Who would have believed that the internet puts you in touch with the world, with libraries and art and music and everything else? And in the future, it'll even be better. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be some little screen you look at. So we want to show that, because if you just tell people that we'll use more technology and science in the future, they picture in their own heads whatever they conceive. I don't want that. I want to say this is the kind of furniture. Like you see a guy in the movie, he comes into a home and he sees a gadget that looks like a big mushroom. He says, "What's that?" And it says, "Sit on it." And the guy sits on it, and it adjusts to his body contours. Then he lifts one leg to see what, and it comes up to meet him. He assumes different positions, and it supports him. It's very thin. And he says, "How the hell does that work?" And he's looking underneath for mechanisms. He don't see any. It's all built in the memory of a thin disc. There's another scene where normal people are visiting the home of the future. And there's a family sitting around watching full-wall TV. And the little girl said, "Boy, we've got it all. We got sound around, full-vision TV." They fade out right on. It shows the next several years later. They have a globe and they dial Madagascar on the Earth. They move a little button to Madagascar and the ceiling disappears and birds fly right through you. You're in Madagascar. You can smell the flowers. And we don't grind up flowers and project it into the room. We affect the olfactory system to a rose or jasmine or whatever it is. So you think you're smelling, you can feel the breezes. And so then you dial the Great Barrier Reef off Australia. You set the little ball there. And then bubbles come up all around the ceiling. The sharks swim right through you. You know what I mean? And this little girl says, "We've got it all." You know, we just try to prepare people for tremendous change. You have to help people adapt to change emotionally and intellectually. Because, like I said, if you took your grandmother to Miami Beach with the girl's butts hanging out, they've gone too far. You know, she may be a wonderful person, but she's grown up in a different time. So we want to orient people for change, that the world that you have now is only transitional. Our language is always growing. People are changing. Well, somebody says, is that good or bad? Well, we don't deal with those terms. You know, machines to me are an extension of human attributes. You know, when a doctor says to the nurse, scalpel, sutures, we have a unit that understands language and gives them that right away. Do you understand what I mean? You don't need a nurse standing there. You don't need a nurse moving a fat guy in bed, turning him over, wiping his butt. The bed itself turns him over. And there's a thing that looks like this that can pick a fat guy up out of bed onto a stretcher without the nurses busting their butt trying to do that. You know what I mean? People don't know what technology can do. They just think in terms of what they know. You see what I mean? The future is a fantastic place. So the world I'm talking about is not like this world at all. It's so different. You say, well, what will people be like? They certainly will not be like us. They'll look like us, but their reactions will be different. Their facial expressions different. What they enjoy or don't enjoy, what they aspire toward, will be determined by the nature of conditions in the future. Like I said before, if you took your grandmother to Miami Beach and the girls are walking around bare-butted, she'd say, honey, they've gone too far. So I'm saying you can't ask people today to step into the future and like it. They wouldn't like it any more than your grandmother brought to this world with all these cars going around. She'd be so confused. And other people in the past would never believe there can be thousands of automobiles and the average person owning an automobile. That's not possible. Now, a computer 10 years ago would cost $10 million, what computers do today. So here you got it in your home, and you're in touch with the whole world with your computer. Who would have believed that you would have access to information all over the world? So people today should be able to make the change faster because they've seen more change. The rate of change is getting closer and closer, you know, faster and faster. So if we don't change fast enough, we're going to become a have-not nation. We may already have been headed that way. I thought in working on the design of a global society that what I had put on paper sounded good to me, but I said, how do you know it'll work? And talk to myself. That's what thinking is. So I said, well, I don't know it'll work, but I certainly am going to try to see if it'll work. As long as I use my time this way, I feel okay. But if you start thinking about, I'm getting old, I'm going to die soon, what the hell does that do for you? Nothing. So while you're alive, even if you live to be 30 years old and do wonderful constructive things, you live a good life. When a guy comes up to me and he says, I'm 78 years old, I say, so what? What does it matter? It's not how long you live, it's the quality of your life. Does that make sense to you? I don't know how much sense it makes to other people, but this is it. I never think in terms of getting older. I think in terms of, hey, that's a new thing I'd like to work on, or I'd like to tackle that. I don't think about those things. Yeah. They don't concern me.
Thanks, Jacques Fresco.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank everybody out there for the opportunity for even listening to me.